Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, friends. Hey, thanks for listening to the NOLA Drinks Show this week. As always, happy Jazz Fest, if that's what you're up to. Hey, pretty good weather overall, right? I know we had some pretty heavy rain there the other day when Jazz Fest was getting rolling. I'm sure it was a little bit of a mud bath out there on Thursday. But sunshine and reasonably, I don't want to say cool because it's not cool, but nice warm weather, not too hot, not too humid. So there you go. If you're Jazz Festing, I hope it's going great for you. Hopefully next weekend the weather holds as well. I know we're looking at the possibility of some rain in the middle of the week, but good luck to everybody out there. Get a good pair of shrimp boots. That'll help you out, especially if it rains again. Kind of sits like a bowl there in the fairgrounds, doesn't it? But hey, friends, we got a good show coming up for you today. We're actually talking barbecue, and it's something that I've been kind of wanting to do for a little while. Talking about styles and some things like that. And I think it's kind of interesting here because, you know, here in New Orleans itself, we don't really have a synonymous style of barbecue. I think a lot of what you find is stuff that draws from some of the different traditions, South Carolina, Texas, so on and so forth, to kind of create a style. Now, of course, in South Louisiana in general, we do have the boucherie and cochon de lait, that kind of thing that goes on. And there is some barbecue going on here. But in New Orleans itself, not so much. And I think, you know, when we're talking about the Cajun stuff, like the boucherie, it's a little bit different, but it's the same idea. And I think we see some of that stuff clearly integrated into some of the barbecue styles here. But where we are with our featured interview is we are over at Blue Oak Barbecue, and we're at their spa, which is in Mid-City, 900 North Carrollton Avenue. And we're chatting with the two proprietors, Phil Mosley and Ronnie Evans. But importantly, beyond just talking about barbecue, we are also going to talk about a very, very worthy cause and event, a great charity called Hogs for the Cause. The event just happened, maybe 3 or so weeks ago out at UNO. They raise money for families who have children suffering from pediatric brain cancer. They are their own charity. They have a house or people can come and stay when they're getting medical treatment. They raise a ton of money. I believe, if I remember correctly, we'll say it in the show, $1.4 million this year. And the whole event's a terrific event. Great music, great food. They have 90 or so teams out there barbecuing for a couple days. Everybody's doing something with pig, hence Hogs for the Cause. There you go. And it's just a really well-run, fun, nice event. And again, all for a good cause. So we are also joined by Becker Hall. And Becker is one of the two co-founders of Hogs for the Cause, the event and the charity, and also a big barbecue guy himself. So we do talk about the event, how it went. We were trying to do the show before, but everybody got really busy. It didn't quite fit in my schedule, didn't quite fit into their schedule. So we figured, hey, let's do it after. We're going to talk barbecue because I wanted to do that anyway. And then we can talk about how the event went down, how much money they raised, who won, all that good stuff. So we get into that as well. Want to give a special shout out and thanks to our friends there, Phil and Ronnie at Blue Oak Barbecue, because, man, they set me up with some serious, serious eats after we finished recording the segment. And I actually, I took it home because there was so much, and I figured that my wife would kill me if I didn't bring her some. And man, it was good. They do some really good stuff. So go check them out for sure. We're going to bounce over there in just a few. Talking barbecue over there at Blue Oak. Also want to mention next week's show, very interesting. Hey, I was talking about Jazz Fest at the top of the broadcast. It's festival season here, friends, right here in New Orleans. As we know, we go straight from Mardi Gras, a little bit of a later Mardi Gras this year, and then we bounce right into festival season in full tilt. And you've heard me say this before. There are about 130 registered festivals annually in the city of New Orleans. That's a lot. It's part of our culture. It certainly is part of our tourism economy, which, as you know, if you listen to the show, we talk about a lot. The tourism economy is the economy, the primary economy in New Orleans, and that's largely made up, of course, with the hospitality industry, the music industry, and really it does connect with the festivals as well, since a lot of the festivals revolve around food and music. It's New Orleans, right? So I thought it would be really interesting to do a show to sort of talk about the festival economy. We've certainly talked about particular festivals. You know, we have our French Quarter Fest series. And if you're interested in that, please go check out our website, noladrinks.com. Look for French Quarter Fest series, where we interview musicians who participate in the festival, talk about music, talk about food and drink, and all that good stuff. But this is a different angle. We're going to talk about festivals themselves, sort of what they mean to the cultural and economic fabric of the city. And just, you know, some of it's important, both for locals as well as for visitors. So we're going to be joined by Christian Saunier. This is the plan as it stands now. We're going to be joined by Christian Saunier, who is with the New Orleans Tourism and Marketing Corporation. And then two festival runners, Emily Maduro from said French Quarter Fest will be joining us, as well as Cleveland Spears, the man who started the Fried Chicken Festival, which I believe maybe just went through its third iteration. And, of course, French Quarter Festival just went through its 36th iteration. So I think we're going to have some really good perspective, a newer festival. It's the National Fried Chicken Festival, so it, you know, has a reach well beyond New Orleans. So does French Quarter Fest. I think they can both speak to the dynamics of how it works with visitors, how it works with locals, and really why these things are so important to us on many levels. So I'm really looking forward to doing that show, friends, for you next week. Go get the podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can easily connect with all of that, once again, at noladrinks.com. Friends, we're going to take a short break here on the show, and then we're going to be back over at Blue Oak Barbecue. Talking what? Yep, barbecue. Come on back.
Well, after I'm through. Goodbye, Joe. I got to go. Me oh my. I gotta go. Pull up hero down the bio. My boss is the sweetest one. Me oh my. Son of a gun, we're gonna have big fun on the bio. Said jambalaya, crawfish pie, filet gumbo. Cause tonight I'm gonna see Mama Shadow Meal.
Welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show this week, friends. As always, yep, as you know, we're here at Blue Oak Barbecue, 900 North Carrollton, guys. Is that right?
That's right. That's
North
correct.
Carrollton here in Mid-City. And I am joined by two of the proprietors, Phil Mosley and Ronnie Evans. Gentlemen, thanks for having us here.
Thanks for coming by.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And we're also joined by Becker Hall, who is one of the founding guys behind the great event Hogs for the Cause. Becker, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, my pleasure. So you guys, we're talking a little bit about barbecue. We're going to talk a little bit about style, talk about some other stuff. But let's start by talking about Hogs for the Cause. It's a great event. It's a great charity. Becker, maybe tell people a little bit about what the event just occurred, but tell people kind of what you do, what the mission is.
Sure. So Hogs for the Cause was founded about 10 years ago. Actually, it was our 11th iteration of the event about a month ago. And it kind of, as we were talking before we got on air here, you know, myself and Renee Luop, my co-founder, had come back from our college and experiences. And we're talking a lot about how boucherie and cochon de lait really existed in southwest Louisiana, but barbecue at the time just really did not in New Orleans. And where I went to school in South Carolina, we used to roast whole hogs before every single football game. And I went to the University of South Carolina, and we were 0-21 under Lou Holtz's direction. So we got
he's
a little
the man.
Bit. You know, we got pretty involved on. We kind of joked and said the pigskin off the field versus the pigskin on the field. So we came back to New Orleans and said, hey, let's do a pig roast and invite some friends out. And before that, we were introduced to a family who had a child with an inoperable brain tumor called Dipchi. So we said, let's use this opportunity to raise some money for this family. And we had about 200 friends come out and raise close to $10,000 and thought, that's a hell of a, you know, success right there. And now fast forward 11 years later, we're about a 35,000 person event, over 100 teams, 95 this year. And we're raising over a couple million dollars a year. These guys alone are getting close to six figures or raising six figures towards the cause. Mm-hmm. So just surrounded by amazing guys and kind of furthers the ethos of barbecue being really about camaraderie and you know, there's a lot of people cooking great food and doing it for a great cause.
Yeah, awesome. Ronnie, or either one of you guys, what does it mean to you guys to participate in the event?
Well, as Becker was saying, you know, being the 11th year, I think, well, our we've been 5 years?
It's five or six, I want to say.
And every year, I mean, the things they're doing with the event, the acts they're bringing, the amount of teams that have grown from, I think when we started, it was maybe like at 30 or 40. It's just, it's pretty tremendous how far it's come in such a short span of time. Mm-hmm. And we're super excited every year when it comes around. And we couldn't be more happy to help raise money for such a great cause.
Yeah, it's a great event, and it's a lot of fun, and you're cooking barbecue, and everybody's having a good time. But it's also like for this awesome cause that is kind of niche in some ways. Like a lot of people don't think about this as like something to, you know, donate to regularly. So it kind of brings light to this situation that families deal with. So just like a, you know, it's, everyone's having fun, and there's something good is coming out of it in other ways.
Yeah.
So it's really cool.
How much money did y'all raise, Becker? Do you guys know from this year?
It was about $1.4 million.
Wow.
$1.2 to $1.4 million. So, and that money goes towards to families who have children with pediatric brain cancer. And that's important because what a lot of people don't understand is that pediatric brain cancer has actually taken over leukemia as the number one terminal cancer in children. So, unfortunately, our demand gets stronger and stronger each year, but our teams raise more and more money, so we're able to meet that demand in that niche, which Ronnie was talking about.
Is there a specific charity that you all work with, or is it?
We are the charity.
You are the charity. And then,
that's right.
And then you guys donate directly to the families.
We donate directly to families, and, you know, we built a $2 million house at Children's Hospital in New Orleans that allows all families, no matter what they're getting treated for, as long as they're staying overnight, they can stay in this house. So it's kind of, it's called the Hogs House. It's
awesome.
Beautiful, almost boutique hotel in an old property uptown. So, you know, we're trying to stretch out a little bit more and help as many people as we can.
Cool.
We were lucky enough to raise enough money to donate a room at the house.
That's right. Nice, man.
So they have their own room in the Hogs House, and we'll be doing that unveiling in late May. So that's going to be cool.
So it's going to be called like the Blue Oak Barbecue Room or something?
It is.
Oh,
we actually
sweet.
Have a meeting with Children's Hospital Tuesday at Blue Oak to discuss it. So,
there you go. Full circle,
man. Right on. So yeah. when you guys do the event, either one of you guys so it's kind of cool, right? Friday evenings, everybody's out there, Friday late afternoon, I guess, and then you guys do Saturday during the day. So there's food being served on Friday, and kind of bacon is typically the theme, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, it's really a bacon night. There was 2 tons of bacon provided by Newski's bacon out there this Friday night.
We love Newski's.
Yeah. I mean, you got to remember, barbecue takes a long time to make and serve, so we needed something that's kind of quick plating, and bacon is pretty quick plated,
and people like it, so
and they love it,
and
it fits
sense.
Under our hogs theme and pork centric, and then Saturday's the big barbecue day.
Yeah, right. So then you guys are out there actually overnight, right, doing a lot of the prep and smoking and doing everything else.
It's definitely one of the longest days of the year for us. You know, we set up all week, and then we get out there and get everything prepped, get everything on the pit, and we have to man the fires overnight, so it's a long night. Saturday is our favorite day just because it's like more like kind of turn everything in and we're ready to have a good time and kind of relax. It's kind of culminates up to this.
Yeah, I guess
time.
It depends on your approach. Some people have a really good time Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm guessing that there's like beer and bourbon involved and stuff like that.
Yeah, a lot of that.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
We have to be somewhat tame because we have to like watch these pits and cook this food. So some of these guys really enjoy that Friday night more than others, but
it's always great staying up and seeing who actually falls asleep by their fire.
Oh yeah, there you go.
It's actually a good way of knocking out some of the competition,
right?
Yeah, a buddy of mine does. His wife works for Cathead Vodka.
Yeah,
and so he's been out there helping the Cathead team. And I said, "So what'd you do last night?" He said, "I stayed the hell out of the way."
Yeah,
I thought that was probably
those
a good,
guys.
A good plan.
That team, which you're talking about, Mississippi Bacon Association, they score really high year over year.
They also
are maybe the most hammered when they come up on stage for awards too. And I've got a great pick from this year of one of their guys, shirtless, 300 pounds, just picked me up like a rag doll and slung me over his shoulders.
So the way it works, guys, right? If I'm not mistaken, you guys are obviously a brick and mortar barbecue restaurant here. But it ranges from that to people that are just a like backyard barbecue clubs, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, there's no stipulations to enter the barbecue competition. Mm-hmm. You just, you know, there is no amateur category. It's you're going in there and you're testing your mettle against everybody.
Everybody. Yeah. Now, tell us a little bit about Blue Oak, you guys. How did you all get started?
Well, it's been a long journey. I think we started about coming up on 7 years.
In July, I think.
We've been on the corner of Carrollton and Dumaine for 3 years as of last week. Ronnie and I kind of got our feet wet in Colorado about 8 years ago, and then just kind of had aspirations, even dating way back to when we were younger, you know, in middle school, weirdly enough, to have a restaurant. And then one day...
Was barbecue always the idea?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
It kind of, I think, evolved later on.
What did
like
it
Becker
start
said,
with?
There
I'm
was,
curious now.
There was a void.
You know, fifth grade, it's like, yeah, we're going to have a bar and be a bunch of girls there. And, you know, like some sweet
so
restaurant.
Some things haven't changed. Yeah. Little did you know how unglamorous it actually is.
Definitely, barbecue is not at the top of the list. If you had asked me, 10 years ago, I guess it was probably a little beyond that I'd be cooking barbecue right now for a living, I would think you're crazy. So.
Right. So where were you guys before you were here on Carrollton?
We started in Grits, which is a dive bar right off Chapultepec, yeah. Uptown. We stuck that out for about a year, doing real late nights. Our main hours were midnight to about 6 a.m. Fridays and Saturdays. We wanted to get out of there as soon as we could, and Chicky Wawa was the second opportunity. We stuck there for about 2.5 yep. years, and that's where we really started to focus on some recipe development, you know, kind of honing in what we actually wanted to do, kind of getting away from the cheese fries and late-night barbecue tacos, and, you know, we grew a clientele there that is really close to here. It's probably about 2 miles away from our new location, and so a lot of that clientele transferred. And, you know, we've just been growing ever since.
You took the lead.
I think that you guys were really smart about it, too. Just not only how to grow, but the due diligence that y'all took to do it, going around the country and really getting acquainted with all the barbecue that's out there and who's making successful barbecue and how that kind of equation works. So,
yeah.
I think
we really didn't know much until we took a trip to Texas. It really opened our eyes. And, then we came back, and, well, we wanted to move there. We were like, well, we can't close up shop. So we started to tweak things significantly at that point. And we
take trips to – we'll go to, like, different markets and try barbecue, like, every quarter or 6 months just to see what's going on. And because the barbecue world is always kind of developing. And, you know, 5 years ago it was all about, like, brisket sausage and ribs, and now it's starting to be like more offal stuff, and people are getting more creative to kind of stand out from the pack. So we always try to see like what people are doing, like what's trending, not even just in barbecue, but also in just like the culinary world,
right.
Just to kind of keep things fresh, because you always have to keep things new and fun to kind of keep people excited about what you're doing.
Yeah, I think just the younger generation, they eat out more and they're a little bit more interested in curious with what they're going to eat, so.
Different things, and mixing it up a little bit. Well, let's do this, you guys, because this is kind of what we're meant to talk about a little bit more today. Talk about styles and some things like that. So why don't we take a little break here? Pause
sure.
for a commercial break, and then we're going to come back. We're chatting with Phil, Ronnie, and Becker, and we're talking barbecue. We're here at Blue Oak Barbecue, North Carrollton, friends.
Yep,
come on back. Thank you. everybody. Welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. We're here at Blue Oak Barbecue, 900 North Carrollton, right here in Mid-City. And, we're talking barbecue, right? That's what we do at a barbecue place. And you guys were talking about Ronnie and Phil touring around. You talked about going to Texas. And Becker mentioned this, too, that in Southwest Louisiana, there's the boucherie and cochon de lait style, which I would argue is a style that we have here, indigenous to the area. But how do you guys, then, since we don't really have a New Orleans-style barbecue, how do you approach that kind of stuff? And what are you guys looking to accomplish?
I agree. Like, if you come to New Orleans, people aren't necessarily looking for, like, a rack of ribs. They might be looking for crawfish etouffee or gumbo. So, that's always been, like, a battle for us to kind of overcome that kind of idea. But we kind of created our own style by just picking and choosing things that work for us. And some things are specific to regions, but some things we just kind of created. So, like, brisket, for instance, will be, like, salt and pepper, Central Texas style. Ribs are kind of something that we developed over the years, where we first started with, like, dry rub, which might be something that you'd see in Memphis or, like, the Alabamas. But then we started adding some, like, glaze that we kind of played with to kind of make it our own. So it had, like, the dry rub base, but it's kind of sticky. We really love our ribs. Pulled pork's, like, kind of straightforward. That's something that, you know, it's basically just salt, smoke, and, you know, pig. Some thyme. Yeah, time, pig. Right.
I think New Orleans barbecue could be better classified as American barbecue. It's just an immigration of all different styles, and that's kind of what America is and
kinda
how it was founded. Yeah. So, you know, some guys have tried some pretty cool stuff. I mean, there's not that many certain crops or things that are indigenous to New Orleans only, but, you know, we do have very strong Vietnamese culture, and, you know, there are some guys doing some NOLA kind of East sauces, and they're doing, I don't know, it's hard to get, and it's also hard to cultivate a new identity in barbecue.
Yeah, so. when the weather gets cooler, we'll take some brisket and throw it in some pho. Like, we'll make a pho stock overnight and add a bunch of fresh herbs and sprouts and some sliced brisket on there, and it's got some smoky kind of fresh taste with herbs that's really good. And something that's local to Louisiana are cracklins, which is, you know, a lot of people don't know that if they're not from here, which is basically like a skin on pork belly. So we smoke it for a while, then we cube it up, fry it, and then cool it down and fry it again. So we cook it three times. Oh,
wow. Probably an item that sells the fastest out at Hogs, but it's the most labor intensive.
It's super labor intensive and real pain in the neck, but it's a really awesome thing. That's something that you can find in Louisiana that we kind of bring in to kind of create that effect of different techniques and something that's from Louisiana.
I think people don't really realize that the variety of crackling preparation that's out there. That's actually one of my favorite things about Hogs is being able to go around and see what different people do with their cracklings. I think it's a good barometer. Maybe I'm making that up. Maybe it's just because I like cracklings.
No, you're right. For sure.
Yeah, it's you know, we wanted to try to introduce some kind of category to it, but it's a real art to do it right, and it's so, once again, labor intensive that only a certain few people can really do it. And if you can do it well, you're, like Ronnie said, in New Orleans, it's gonna sell well.
Take off. Yeah. Well, Phil, what are some of your favorite styles, man? I mean, we did talk about Texas a little bit. What are you guys kind of gravitating towards these days as you synthesize what you do here?
I mean, kind of like Ronnie was saying, you know, we have our traditional menu items that'll probably never leave. But, you know, if you follow our Instagram at Blue Oak BBQ, you'll see the variation.
Again, right on.
You'll see the variety of fun stuff that we incorporate our traditional items into fun stuff. Like you said, pho, or, you know, we do McRib sandwiches, what we call the McRon.
Okay,
the Philly.
You know, brisket Phillies.
What you got today?
I mean, yesterday we did a prime rib with like a French onion dip. French dip.
And then we ran out of the prime rib, so we threw chopped brisket in there, and I think it was better than the prime rib, so we might be on to something there.
Now, do any of the specials ever make it as regulars, or they always just stay as, like, standard weekly specials?
One of the ones that we ran as a special for a while, which is also a sleeper on the menu, is the smoked chicken salad sandwich. So we smoked chicken, kind of cut it up and mix it with celery and onions and some mayo and stuff. And we put it on some Texas toast with a fried green tomato, some pickled red onions, and some lettuce. And it's an awesome sandwich. It doesn't.
That sounds great.
It's not as heavy. It makes you feel like you're eating something healthier, which might not necessarily be the case.
With the Texas toast and the fried green
tomato. Yeah, but it's a lighter, like coldish option that, you know, it's not as like heavy on the body.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's a cool example because you are pulling in a couple, you know, 2-3 different styles there, right, when you're putting that sandwich together.
Yeah.
What did y'all do out at Hogs for the Cause?
We did quite a few things. This year we actually invited some other barbecue friends from different areas. We had two people from Texas. We had Bodacious and Fijus Barbecue. We had Galen Iverstein from Iverstein Butcher in Baton Rouge, Anthony from Swig and Swine in Charleston, and Cody from Hoodoo Ridgefield, Connecticut.
Yeah, Hoodoo Brown.
So we had, you know, we kind of wanted to get them involved, help raise money, and, you know, just introduce them to Hogs for the Cause, you know, try to get them down every year now.
Did everybody kind of come in and do their own thing?
Yeah,
a little
so everybody,
bit or contribute?
Which was kind of a cool thing we put together so everybody could try stuff from different areas.
I'm kind of shocked y'all did that as former grand champions of Hogs that you allowed the reins to loosen like that.
Well, we won it once, so we might as well start having fun with it.
Yeah. Still finished, what, fifth this year, grand champion?
Yeah. We're pretty happy about that.
But with their help, you know, we were able to raise probably double than our normal.
Yeah, okay. It was unfortunate. They came backstage with this massive check, and it was at this moment at Hogs where there was absolute catastrophe going on the op side, and we were trying to get everything together. We were like, wait a minute, we got to break and beat these guys, but that's events.
Yeah. That does happen, right?
Yeah.
And I think I know what you're talking about. We'll talk about that during the break in a second here. But, since you mentioned the fundraising part, you guys, I was talking to maybe the Swino folks we were talking about off-air at Bourbon Festival. It's kind of almost become a year-round thing, right? As teams, you guys are not just showing up with a check. You're doing stuff all year round to raise money.
Yeah, we we do a portion of daiquiri sales. We'll do a hog nog during December. We do proceeds from our spicy chicken sandwiches. We actually have
we actually do every one now.
What's that?
I think every $1 out of every spicy chicken sandwich we sell goes to Hogs,
which does a lot of volume.
It does. I mean, we sell a bunch of those sandwiches, only available on Tuesdays, but it's a really great sandwich, and you're doing something good by eating it. So.
Yeah, cool. What is hog nog? I just have to ask that question.
It actually doesn't have any pork or bacon or anything.
Oh, yeah. it's just a clever name.
It's a spin-off of an eggnog, and it rhymes.
I mean, we do make bacon-infused vodka in our office, so
yeah,
it's pretty terrible.
I think we put the bacon in there.
Man, I make it at home, dude.
But like we were saying before, Hogs is basically a year-round event. I mean, this guy's always working on it. And, you know, we try to do like one or two events sprinkled throughout the year just to keep people interested and raise some money and give our people opportunity to donate and raise some money. So I'm not sure what we're going to do this year, but it'll be something good. Maybe a golf tournament. I don't know.
There you go.
Okay, there you go. Let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break on the show. Come back. We'll talk a little bit more about barbecue. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Cool. Hey, friends, we're chatting with Ronnie, Phil, and Becker here at Blue Oak Barbecue. We can take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, friends. Come on back.
Dad's been shucking dozens since 42. Iron tub ice down full of Falstaff brew. Black head of son Bobby Charles Cold Blue. Catholic Church.
Welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here at the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. We are at Blue Oak Barbecue here, friends, 900 North Carrollton Avenue in Mid-City. Hey, we're taping this during lunchtime. You guys got a good crowd in here.
Yeah, we it's a little quiet with the weather today, but we keep it pretty busy. Once the doors open at 11, we're cranking it out.
Yeah, I mean, we were here setting up, and then you guys opened at 11, as you said, and you got people in here immediately, man.
Even through this thunderstorm.
People want barbecue, man.
Well, they do.
So let's talk about this, you guys, a little bit. As we've sort of seen here in New Orleans, quite a few more barbecue joints have opened up in the past few years. What are some of your impressions about the scene here? Everybody's kind of different. Hey, we don't have to name names or anything like that, but... You know, kind of
I guess
where
I'm
do we see this
the
all
most
going?
Impartial.
Yeah, there you go, Becker. You take, you handle this one, man.
You know, when we started Hogs 10 years ago, there really wasn't much on that scene. I think that really the only traditional barbecue that we had here was probably the joint down in the Bywater and maybe some other offshoots of barbecue there. And then I think that a lot of people realized that there was kind of, we're in one of the biggest and most wonderful food cities in the world, and there was a huge void there. Which, when there's voids and there's business, there's opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of people, I think with technology and was another thing, was on. You can learn anything through the internet these days. And not only that, we just have this huge tailgating tradition here in Louisiana and New Orleans especially. And I think that renders itself a little bit to barbecue. And another thing that, you know, that's kind of successful for Hogs is anytime a man gets a hobby, they tend to get a little overzealous with it. And a lot of times hobbies can turn into fruitful businesses. And once I think some people saw people producing commercial barbecue, they said, I can do that better. And that's what happened.
Is that kind of what happened with you guys? I mean, you guys saw that there was really kind of a void here and
yeah, for sure. I think like Becker said, when we were coming up, it was, I think joint was the main one, and then as we opened
Chain Barbecue with Voodoo, and that
was
those were the
used to have
hitters.
Luther's Corky's. They're all chains, which are actually pretty
like
solid.
Richard Schilling, a few trailers around, stuff like that, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, you could maybe go down to like the 7th Ward and buy some barbecue on the side of the road, whatever that may be. But commercial, you know, smoke, let's call it stick burning barbecue, was not present at all. So
I think people that are listening outside the area, we have a lot of listeners outside the area that get the podcast, are always surprised when we talk about certain foods that are not represented here in New Orleans. You know, like you were talking about, Becca, you mentioned we have a strong Vietnamese community here, so great Vietnamese food. We don't have a huge Chinese population here. The Chinese food scene's kind
of
lacking.
One of the biggest arguments we probably have on our Hogs group chat is who makes the best Chinese and where do you get it?
And where do you get it?
I still don't know.
Do you have any answers?
There is no clear-cut answer one's coming along soon, we hope. But I think that was the conversation people were having 10 years ago about barbecue. They wanted it. They just couldn't find it. And it was, why do I have to go to this place to get it? And people kind of wised up to that. And I mean, some people say Hogs was a springboard for it. I don't think so. It was just that we saw that opportunity, too, that a lot of people wanted to explore this area of cooking, and it may have opened up also more palates to people going, hey, I like barbecue, I'm missing it here, and people said I could do that.
We like to think that barbecue is the ultimate comfort food, and you know, it's something warm, it's been cooked long, it's like tender, just kind of warming. So I think a lot of people can be interested in that.
But the interesting thing about it also is there can be room for many barbecue places in a city. And in New Orleans, even though we're so oversaturated with restaurants, we've got a bunch of barbecue, probably 8 to 10 significant barbecue places now, and they're all doing fairly well. So you can, like, as y'all went on your trips to Texas or Memphis, you can now do tours of New Orleans barbecue and have a pretty educated opinion about what you like and probably come away pretty happy from that tour.
Who's in different approaches. And thanks for sharing that, because I think, again, people from outside the area, even here, who don't know, are probably surprised to hear this. You know, you think it's the South and there's going to be barbecue around, and there's really not. Let's talk about this, you guys, in the last few minutes that we have. Hogs for the Cause, Becker, next year. You guys have your dates, obviously, and all that, yeah?
March 27th and 28th, 2020.
Okay, awesome.
2020.
And, yeah, Renee wanted me to do, like, really bad dad jokes about that and be like, hey, I don't know the dates. I don't have 20/20 vision. But,
I was like, I can't. Nice. And you did just.
I've only got one kid. He's got a lot. So,
but it's a cool. How many people did you have at the event this year? Did you say that already? How much you raised?
Gosh, I don't even know now. It was probably a lot. Close to 30,000 around that.
Okay,
figure.
Over the 2 days.
A lot, and that's 30,000 people that want to eat barbecue. So it shows you that it's out there. It went from 200 to 30,000. So
yeah, and you guys have good music out there. I wanted to touch on that too because you guys bring in some good local bands, but then you also bring in some bands from out of the area.
You know, also being in a town that's festival saturated, it was important to be differentiated. So we had to kind of program and curate the music that's extremely different from what you're going to get in the next couple weeks with all the free New Orleans bands at French Quarter Fest and then the big national acts at Jazz Fest. We kind of found this little niche in Americana that plays really well with barbecue. So fortunately, that's growing for us.
I will say this, that one of my highlights, we're talking about bands from outside the area, but Hot 8 Brass Band, man, they just killed it this
year.
Yeah,
had them the last 2 years. They won some award last night. I forgot what it was, but... yeah, they're great guys.
How does it work too with the awards for Hogs for the Cause? Is it just a single grand champion that takes into account people's choice and fundraising? And
it's kind of like a traditional barbecue event. There's basically top 10 calls, which say I got a call, which means you got in the top 10, and then there'll be the top 3 stage. They come up on stage and win their award, and it's absolute chaos. But we have so many categories now. There's probably 15 categories from which you get calls and stage on. But Grand Champ comes down to just, you know, that's the cream of the crop. That
accounts for fundraising as well as the barbecue
there
itself?
There is a fundraising element to it. Okay. So essentially we have 4 main categories, which are whole hog, ribs, shoulder, which is pulled pork, and then we have an anything goes category called pork puree, which a lot of people love to win. And then the top 3 of those 4 qualify for your grand champ. That's 90% of your score, and then 10% is fundraising.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, you do have to do a little bit of fundraising to win grand champ, but it really comes down to the food.
To the food, yeah, cool. So, March 27th and 28th, you said 2020.
Where 2020.
2020. Where do y'all, tell people where they can find the website and all that.
We're at hogsforthecause.org and Instagram, hogsforthecause. The event is always at the UNO Lakefront Arena, the grounds outside of there. Many people are familiar with that with the Days of Widespread Panic.
Yes.
Who will be playing here next week. And also Halloween time again this year.
So are they really?
Coming back.
Filling in for the Rolling Stones, filling in for Fleetwood Mac is now Widespread Panic.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, what a
and we actually barbecue where the Pope spoke in New Orleans. So it's an altar of barbecue now, but
nice.
That's a year old.
You know, what is it when you elect a new Pope? It's like white smoke. So
yeah, when they make the decision,
there's still smoke
white.
Out there.
Yeah,
the Pope's
got
a
like
little barbecue, I would
that's
imagine.
Right. Absolutely.
I'm going to tell my mother-in-law that. She'll dig that story. You guys, where do we find Blue Oak Barbecue, both on the street and online and all that good stuff?
We are at the corner of Dumaine and North Carrollton, 900 North Carrollton in Mid-City. Right off the streetcar line, real close to City Park, and our website's blueoakbbq.com, same as our Instagram and Twitter.
But you could also see that sexy pink van of y'all doing catering all over the city.
Yeah, you guys do a lot of catering too, don't you?
We
available
do.
For catering.
We do.
We do a lot of catering.
Yeah,
big or small.
And are you guys open lunch and dinner 7 days a week? How does that work?
We're open 6 days a week, okay. Tuesday to Sunday from 11 to 9.
Okay. So food keeps rolling out all afternoon long. Man.
We try to keep everything in stock, but sometimes we run out. So, you know.
Gotcha.
Happens sometimes, but.
Full bar.
Come early.
I want to highlight the full bar.
We've got a full bar, a bunch of bourbons. We do bourbon flights. We got a bunch of scotch, 10 taps for draft, a bunch of beer varieties, and we got daiquiris.
Cool.
And they're delicious. Perfect for jazz, a drink to go over to Jazz Fest.
Perfect. There you go. But you guys, we're going to close out the radio portion of the show. The three of you are going to stick around for another shot with Noah Drinks. We're going to talk about barbecue styles, some other considerations. But come check these guys out at Blue Oak Barbecue, 900 North Carrollton. And be sure to check out hogsforthecause.org. Get involved for their worthy, worthy organization. So, friends, remember, be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. And until then, cheers, y'all.
shy. What are you doing in a place like this? I said I called your name, but no one came. Now I see you become just like the company you keep. Then he said, I'll be saints and all these sinners will try.
Everybody, thanks for sticking around for another shot with NOLA Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in this week to the NOLA Drinks Show. Friends, as always, hope you're enjoying our conversation there, talking barbecue with Becker, Phil, and Ronnie. And I touched on this during the interview. Man, they do a great business in there. We were taping during the lunch hour the other day, and they had a great crowd in there. Food's really, really good, and they set me up with some food, which I mentioned, and at the top of the show, and it's delicious. So do go check it out. They do a really good job, and I think it's interesting talking about how they synthesize some of these different styles. They go around, explore barbecue in different parts of the country, bring that back, and put it in the roux here, as we say, in New Orleans, because why? They bring a little New Orleans influence to it, too, and they come up with some really good stuff. So do go check those guys out. I appreciate their hospitality. And, of course, talking about Hogs for the Cause, the terrific event. Just enjoyed its 11th year. Great deal of success benefiting families battling pediatric brain cancer. Be sure to get involved with them in some way or another. At least come out to the event next year when it happens. Friends, we're going to bounce right back over to Blue Oak, and we're going to talk a little bit more about barbecue style with those guys. Here we go. Yep, another shot with NOLA Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. As you know, we are here at Blue Oak Barbecue, Mid-City, New Orleans, and we're talking about barbecue. You betcha. And I am joined by Ronnie, Phil, and Becker. And we talk a lot about Hogs for the Cause, a great organization that these guys are involved in. Becker's one of the two founders of the event. But you guys were talking about a little bit about styles and kind of, I don't know, you want to really call it a family tree of barbecue style, maybe is a way to put it. How do we kind of look at that? If people are kind of thinking barbecue is all one thing, how do we sort of break down that family tree for them?
I think every region will probably think that they do barbecue the best, but there's so many varieties and styles and techniques and woods they use or not use, charcoal. You know, there's a lot of different ways to do it, but there's a handful of kind of quintessential styles that people can associate with. Ones being like kind of Texas style. There's East Texas, West Texas, but Central Texas is probably the most famous with like salt and pepper brisket cooked for a long time. Make sausage, usually an all beef sausage, and then ribs. Those are kind of like the Texas Trinity. Then you have like Memphis, which they could, you know, it could be wet or dry. When I think of Memphis barbecue, I usually think like dry rub, kind of like Rendezvous.
Okay. And then West could be more sauce then, right?
Yeah. It'd be like more like, you know, they kind of sop it along the way and it's a little wetter. Then you have like Kansas City, which is like kind of like a, you know, thick ketchup-based sauce that's going to be a little sweeter. And then Becker can probably tell you a little bit more about the Carolina styles that exist, which is, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the South Carolina, which kind of got my start in barbecue and still... It's interesting. It's for a small state like that to have four different types of barbecue being kind of sauce-based, but your vinegar, your mustard, your light and your heavy tomato. And while I was in South Carolina, you couldn't get me to touch a mustard on anything. And now, as I've evolved in age, actually mustard is my preferred form of barbecue. And what people don't realize is they think traditional mustard, and it's really just sweet heat mustard, and it really adds a lot of flavor to it.
So would you say it's like honey mustard, kind of?
No, or I don't know. I don't really eat honey mustard either, yeah. So I don't know. But closer to that than traditional mustard.
So when you're saying, you mean like French's yellow mustard is what you're talking about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, it's yellow, but I mean, it's always doctored up with a little bit of vinegar and sugar, so, yeah, yeah, and a little bit of cayenne. But also South Carolina has their own traditional styles, too. They do a lot of hashes and what they call bogs. And that's just a lot of barbecue over rice and rice and barbecue dishes. And then, obviously, you'll wake your way up to what some people might consider the mecca of barbecue in North Carolina and doing vinegar base. But
And what is that? Does that kind of help? Does the vinegar help break down the fat and stuff in there a little bit? Is that kind
of
the idea?
Well, that's interesting because a lot of times people, their style's different too. If you made a pulled pork sandwich in North Carolina, that sandwich may come with a vinegar, with pulled pork with vinegar on it. It'll also have whole hog cracklings on top of it and may not have slaw, and that's what they would call it. That's what they would tell you. That is a traditional pulled pork sandwich.
Yeah, they call really it they call it barbecue sandwich. Yeah, barbecue it's not sandwich. Even pulled pork. It's just barbecue. It's just cooked down pork.
But it gives you the texture, and it gives you the texture from the crackling and the texture from the slaw. How these traditions got to the ways that they did, I will never know. But it's kind of fascinating that they did. And that's what Sam Jones knows.
Yeah, there's a lot of tradition there. And, you know, you can find Sam Jones up in North Carolina is cooking whole hog probably better than most. And then you got Rodney Scott in South Carolina who's definitely put him up for – give him a run for his money. So it's – you know, it's you don't see a lot of beef in the Carolinas.
Yeah, it's a lot
it's
of
all,
pig, right?
It's all pork, yeah.
Right. And then there's the Alabama barbecue. It's kind of chicken-based and white sauce.
Yeah, white sauce. Yeah. So, you know, you could – you could probably go to somebody's house in Kenner, and they have their own style. So
I think Mike Mills from 17th Street Barbecue, I read, had a really good quote.
Where is that, man?
17th Street Barbecue.
It's in Illinois. It's
outside of Chicago.
Yeah. There you go.
And I think I read it was something like, if you didn't invent fire, you didn't invent barbecue.
That makes sense.
If you didn't invent what?
Fire, then you didn't invent barbecue.
And there's the Delta has its own style of barbecue too, which is a lot of whole hog barbecue, and that's just right by Memphis. So, and it's very different from what you're getting in Memphis.
And let's talk about boucherie, which we do obviously have around here. Cajun butchering, and you guys want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, for us at Hogs, we named Hogs for the Cause, and originally we were going to call it Pigtails because there's going to be a crawfish boil and pig roast. But we Renee and I asked each other, what's the most versatile protein out there? And it's the pig. I mean, you can go snout to tail, and that's kind of what a boucherie is. You're using every element of the pig, and it's nothing goes to waste. And I think that kind of speaks to what Ronnie was talking about earlier with people wanting offal and those types of different meats and exotic parts of animals in their dishes now. But that I think that can point back to boucherie.
Right. Yep. Where do we see more beef? Out west, right? Tri-tip
Texas.
And stuff in Texas?
Texas is beef is king. And then if you go west of California, you got that... What do they call, like, cooking tri-tip over, like, an open flame?
That's good.
Too. Yeah.
Oh, it's like Santa Maria.
That's an underrated cut of meat right there.
Hey, man,
tri-tips are great. Yeah, tri-tip's great. If it tastes good, it doesn't matter what style or technique it is. It just tastes good, and it's barbecue. So
I remember I cooked a tri-tip like 2 years ago, and I asked my wife to cut it up. Didn't understand how you had to kind of cut against it.
Yeah.
Wasn't a very good experience.
You know,
I was telling you guys that got chopped.
Yeah, I was telling you guys I grew up out in California, so I grew up eating tri-tip. And when I first moved here 11, 12 years ago full time, I used to beat my head against the wall, man. I would ask everywhere if anybody had it, and nobody had it. And then the butcher shop across the way from us finally started getting them in. And I would just try. My wife was going to kill me because I kept buying them and buying them. Like, I got to keep the supply running, man. I need to,
you know, there's
boost demand here.
I feel like there's one of those in New Orleans now that's on the rise, and that's the spinalis, the ribeye cap. People are always trying to find.
I mean,
you can find them at Costco once a month. You got to be in there at the right moment because people who are in the know are buying the hell out
so
of it.
So decadent.
It's a new trend now.
You know what? I've been getting those there, too, and it's like Friday mornings. Get in there. But the problem is they always sell them in 3 and 4 packs.
Yeah.
Which are not too convenient, and they ain't cheap.
They're not cheap, and they don't do well frozen, I've noticed.
No, so they're not. You
got to have a party if you're going to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, cool. You guys, any last thoughts on style that we want to touch on here before we close out?
No. Whatever your style is right.
So, you know.
Yeah.
It's sex and barbecue, and it works.
Yeah, you know, Right on. Well, I appreciate you guys making time. And tell people again one more time, Blue Oak, where do we find you? And online and on the street.
We're in Mid-City, New Orleans, located at 900 North Carrollton, right by City Park.
And
website's blueoakbbq.com.
And all the social media handles the same, right?
And we ship.
And you guys ship.
We do ship.
Okay. Oh, good to know. All right.
And we will ship.
One more time, Hogs for the Cause, man.
Hogsforthecause.org is our website, and Hogs for the Cause is most of our social media.
If people want to start a team, can they? Are you still taking teams on? Or is
we try to keep the teams at about 85 or 90, and we have a really high return rate. But there's no barriers to enter. Just one thing we do say is it's easy to go out there and say, I can do this, I want to do it. But we always say, maybe grab 10 of your friends and get them together and get serious about it, because it's a lot more than you think it is.
It is a lot of work, but
Ronnie
it's a lot
and Phil
of fun.
Can tell you, just barbecue alone is not easy. Yeah. And then trying to serve 30,000 people on top of that, raise money and all that, it's an endeavor, but it's a worthwhile one.
Cool.
You could probably just cook Becker and Renee a couple racks of ribs,
yeah,
a few pork shoulders, and they might let you in.
Yeah, write you a check.
Our office is very close to Blue Oak. They can tell you all where to drop it off.
All right, perfect. Hey, you guys, I appreciate you making time. Thanks for the hospitality. Friends, I'm going to take a little break here. Brief musical interlude. I'll be back with my parting shot. My pleasure. All right, everybody, thanks for listening into the show this week. As always, I greatly, greatly appreciate it. Next week's show, I think I mentioned this at the top of the show, we're going to be talking about festivals and the festival economy, the cultural foundation, not really foundation, but the cultural importance, I guess I should say, of festivals here in the city. Yeah, we have over 130 registered festivals in the city of New Orleans alone, let alone in the surrounding areas. So it's obviously part of the fabric of what we do here. And to that end, as I said at the top of the show, we're going to have three great guests. Christian Saunier, who is one of the vice presidents of the New Orleans Tourism and Marketing Corporation. Emily Maduro, who is the executive director of French Quarter Festivals Incorporated. Just put on another successful French Quarter Festival. And Mr. Cleveland Spears. Cleveland is the executive director, founder of the National Fried Chicken Festival, which takes place here in New Orleans. I believe they just had their third one, if I'm not mistaken. So we're going to talk about festivals, but maybe from a little bit of a different angle than what you're used to hearing. So be sure to check that out next week. Friends, we're here with our parting shot, and got to thinking about a few things. Excuse me. You know, got on the computer this morning and was looking at stuff and on my phone reading some stuff and all the pop-up ads that you get, seeing a lot of Mother's Day stuff. And, you know, Mother's Day is a very important holiday, don't get me wrong, but it got me kind of thinking down the road of Hallmark holidays, right, as we call them, ones that greeting card companies, jewelry shops, that's what I'm trying to say, have trumped up, we'll say, to build those into commercial ventures, these Hallmark holidays. How about beer holidays? Let's think about that one a little bit, because this Sunday coming up is Cinco de Mayo, of course, which means the 5th of May in Spanish. Now, I know not everybody, just side note here, I know not everybody speaks Spanish, but I have had people tell me this before. You know, what day is Cinco de Mayo on this year? The 5th? I'm going to go with that. But I think that's a really good example here of what we're talking about. And yes, in full disclosure, I'm sitting here sipping on a Pacifico. Pick some of that up over the weekend to make micheladas. If you're not familiar with the michelada cocktail, kind of a nice, lighter, a little bit more refreshing, depending on how you make it, I suppose, on both counts, spin on the Bloody Mary. But yeah, great drink. Go check it out. Some good variations on a theme. Maybe we'll talk about how I make them, if that's important to you. We'll talk about that some other time. But yeah, thinking about Cinco de Mayo coming up on Sunday, and as we talked about, that means the 5th of May. Well, it's actually a holiday that is observed to commemorate the Mexican Army's victory in the city of Puebla over the French Empire in the Battle of Puebla, which took place on May 5th, 1862. The United States has actually had a long history with Cinco de Mayo. As a matter of fact, as early as when those events occurred, it is rumored or reported, I guess, with reasonable authority, that miners in the Gold Rush era, or just after the Gold Rush era in California, in the foothills there in the Sierra, learned the news of the Mexican victory of the Battle of Puebla, and there was sort of a spontaneous celebration. And it's actually been celebrated in California since 1863. Now, a lot of people actually think it's Mexican Independence Day. That is not the case. That is actually celebrated September 16th. And that commemorates the Cry of Dolores, which was really the beginning of the war between Mexico and its imperial overlord, Spain, right? That's who they were under the control of, not the French. Now, the Battle of Puebla was a very significant battle nationally as well as internationally. The Mexicans were greatly outnumbered. They had about 4,000 troops. They were less armed than the well-armed French, who had about 8,000 troops. And that was the first time the French had actually lost a battle in almost 50 years. Now, there are some historians that actually argue that it had a great deal of a profound effect on the Americas in a couple different ways. I think this is true. Really, for the most part, no European army invaded the Americas again after that. And another argument has been made that because of the way allegiances were working during the Civil War, which was obviously taking place in the United States at that time, had the French actually won the Battle of Puebla and established more of a foothold in Mexico, could have very easily turned their attention to the U.S. and to the Civil War, and they would have most likely sided with the Confederates. And that could have changed the entire landscape of the U.S. as we know it today, as well as the Americas. So this was a big deal, the Battle of Puebla. Now we kind of fast forward a little bit, and a lot of the observance of Cinco de Mayo, which is really, frankly, greater in the United States, because of, well, we'll get to that in a second, but it really is. As I mentioned, it started in California in 1863. And has been celebrated, you know, there since then. It really became much more popular, though, in the 40s. And then certainly in California primarily became even more popular in the 50s and 60s and started to kind of spread outside California to more of the United States. Now, a lot of what the holiday was about until that point, and I grew up in California, so I've been very familiar with this really my whole life. You know, it was a holiday, and in the case, not really a true national or state holiday, even in California, but around that date or on that date, cultural celebrations, festivals in heavily Hispanic, Mexican populated areas, city of San Jose, I grew up right by there, so that's where a lot of my familiarity comes from, is going to festivals related to Cinco de Mayo in San Jose, celebrating Mexican culture, the mood, the music, the food, and all of that good stuff. Now, what really then kind of started to happen in the 80s, and then certainly into the 90s, and certainly today, is the big beer companies got a hold of this, namely Corona, and they kind of capitalized on the celebratory nature of the day, which it really was, celebrating the culture, not so much celebrating beer, and kind of, you know, it became a Hallmark holiday, and that's why I use the term, it became a beer holiday. As a matter of fact, according to Nielsen, in 2013, more than $600 million worth of beer was purchased in the United States for Cinco de Mayo. That is more than the Super Bowl or St. Patrick's Day. Think about that for a second. That's a lot of beer, and presumably a lot of Mexican beer, and presumably a lot of Corona, and I'm sure some of the other ones like the Pacifico I'm sipping on right now drafted off of that. Now, as I said, it's actually a much bigger deal because of all these dynamics in the United States, and even celebrating the idea of celebrating Chicano, celebrating Mexican culture is really what the roots of this are. Now, some people also say that it's just ignored in Mexico. That's not the case. It's actually not a full-on federal holiday in Mexico, but all the schools are closed in the country, and it is an official holiday in the state of Puebla. Now, how they celebrate it in Mexico and in Puebla in particular, celebrating the culture with food, with music, remembering the historical aspect and the import of the Battle of Puebla. So it does matter in Mexico, but it's not been, distorted into such a thing that it has become in the United States. Now, we are seeing Cinco de Mayo celebrations, I was reading this morning, going on as far away as in Lagos, Nigeria. Now, something to me tells me I don't know how much they're celebrating Mexican culture versus if it's just an excuse to party. But anyway, it's kind of trickling everywhere, and I have a feeling that really does come on the coattails of Corona and Mexican beer. So where am I going with all this? Celebrating Cinco de Mayo is not a bad idea. But what I would ask you to do, especially in these days where we have such an anti-immigrant sentiment, think about the contributions of Mexican Americans that they have made, as well as our good neighbors in Mexico, what that relationship has meant to this country and elsewhere. These people, both within the United States and, of course, our relationship with Mexico, contributes to us on a daily basis. There's the economic importance of this. We would not have the wine industry in the United States as we know it if it weren't for itinerant grape pickers and others that work the fields in the broader world of agriculture in this country and in California in particular. So we wouldn't have wine, and we would not have the agricultural industry as we do in this country, in particular in California. And in California, it is one of the biggest, most important economies in the world, and it is critical to the economy of the United States. Maybe a little bit of a slippery slope, but one can make the argument that if we did not have Mexican immigrant labor, those folks that have come up and worked hard and contributed and oftentimes take jobs that white folks don't want to take and others don't want to take, we wouldn't have an economy in this country. And that would have a global impact. California is the breadbasket of the world in many ways, and a lot of that was built on the backs of Mexican immigrant labor. But beyond that, the contributions to art, the contributions to music, the contributions to cuisine, it is a culture that by and large honors family. We have so many great pockets of Mexican-American culture located in the United States, many places where you can go and experience it firsthand in urban areas, in rural areas, and just even with your neighbors that happen to live next to you in many, many places to enjoy and take in the culture. And it's such an important and such a rich culture. So what I'm asking you to do here on Cinco de Mayo is, yeah, Cinco de Mayo party, great, but don't just pound Coronas. Think about Mexican culture. Think about what our Mexican neighbors to the south of us mean. Think about what our great American, Mexican-American citizens mean to us, to this country. Please don't make it entirely just another drunk fest trumped up by beer companies. Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you. Hasta luego.